Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. We got a great article this month by Jennifer Paris about showing and not telling, and how this applies to not just our writing world, but in life itself. A great example in that article of how her son taught her about showing and not telling. And that's at Author Magazine. That's The Old Show and Not Tell, it's called, by Jennifer Paris. I highly recommend that article. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. Can you believe that? Our 60th anniversary is coming up. Andre Dubuis will be our keynote speaker this year to commemorate our 60th at the PNWA Yearly Writers Conference. Andre Dubuis III, man, that guy can give a keynote address. He rocked the house a few years ago, and he's agreed to come back, and I'm sure he'll do it again. So if you want to get there and connect with agents and publishers and editors, or if you're maybe you're an indie author, you want to learn how to better connect with your readers, or if you want to just connect with other writers, come to the PNWA conference. I'll be giving a 2-hour seminar on connecting to your confidence on the last day of that conference. So go check it out at PNWA.org. PNWA.org is where you want to go. Well, it's never too early to start your writing life. It's true. It's true. You can really be as young as you want. I think I was about 3 years old when I used to stand behind my mother and dictate. I could barely speak. I just learned it. I came to speaking late, but I could speak enough that I could tell her stories and she would type them up for me. And it's also never too late. I was just at a workshop. I was leading a workshop this weekend, and one of the attendees was 84 years old, and she had just published her first novel. And she was there busily taking notes on my little workshop for her next book. It's never too late. And I'm sure today's guests would agree, like a lot of authors, Philip Donnelly came to novel writing sort of in the second half of his life. After he was done with one career, he started up writing. And now he's the author of 5 novels, including the most recent, Aftershock, coming out very soon. It may already be out. But why make the switch, and how did he make it? It's a good question. Fortunately, we have him here to find out why. Philip, welcome to the show.
Bill, it's good to be here.
So, Philip, as I said, novel writing is career number 2 for you. Is that correct?
It was a balancing act early on. I was a pilot in my teens, and I was first published in my teens with a magazine article.
Oh.
And so I wasn't sure which way I wanted to go, and I went ahead and did the flying thing, and I promised myself that someday down the road I'd take a stab at writing a novel. So I've been writing for a long time. I didn't write well till maybe in my late 40s. So it took a while. Takes a while.
Yeah. Now, did that improvement in your writing coincide with the publication of your first book by any chance, or did you have to write a few before you felt you would call yourself a good writer?
Well, you know what happened was I had an English teacher that told me I had potential, which was probably one of the worst things that ever happened to me.
Yeah.
So
why? Why is that such a bad thing?
Well, then I was in college, and I was in English 101 assignment to write a magazine article. And
all right.
And so I did, and I got a B. And I was really incensed by this grade.
Yeah.
So just being the kind of the belligerent person that I was, it's like, okay. So I submitted it to a magazine.
Uh-huh.
And kind of forgot about it. And then about 6 weeks later, a check showed up in the mail.
For your
feet.
Imagine if you'd gotten an A.
I know. Well, so, you know, I'm thinking, so here I have an English teacher that tells me I have potential. And now I'm thinking, well, yeah, I just sit down at the typewriter and, you know, write some stuff down and mail it off, and then a check shows up.
That's so a deal.
I had those things working against me because none of that was actually applicable to writing
novels.
What you lacked at that point, what you had
in bravado and early confidence, you lacked in the sort of discipline necessary to refine your craft. Would you say that's an accurate
reference? Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I sat down many times to write that novel and would just stare at the blank piece of paper and just like, this is harder.
Yeah, the novel is a harder animal than the magazine for the most people. I mean, a magazine column, you kind of know the subject matter. It's maybe 1,500 words. Novel's a whole other animal, isn't it?
Exactly. And now it turns out I can write novels, but I can't write magazine articles to save my life. So we've kind of gone full circle now.
But, we have.
So I flew airplanes. I was a professional pilot for 30 years and flew all over the world. And my first stab at writing novels kind of started from being in a hurricane. I was not flying in one, thankfully, but I was on the East Coast and a hurricane came ashore, and I just really wasn't prepared for that, for the enormity of that storm. And from that kind of sprung the idea for my first book, which was Category 5. And I had success with that. I got an agent right away, and the book had some growing pains. There was a publisher that went bankrupt, but it finally did come out. And then I had my second book come out, but I was still flying, and flying was paying the bills, and I was a senior enough captain at that point, flying international, that kind of felt like I could do both. And I sort of was, and just kind of dabbling at the writing, but the flying was the number one priority. And then on a Tuesday, when I was 52 years old, my flying career came to an end. I had a medical problem that the FAA said you're finished, and so I wasn't sure what to do. I didn't plan on retiring. I was divorced. My son was away at college, and I didn't know what to do. And so I decided I didn't need to live in Minneapolis, which was where I was at the time. And so I put everything in storage except for the stuff I put in my car that I thought I might need for a little six-month road trip to go sort of figure things out. And that six-month road trip is now, it's in its sixth year, actually. So,
wow.
And in the meantime, I've written four more novels. So I travel around. I live in vacation homes. I can go wherever I want. I don't own anything that doesn't fit in my car. I fly fish in the summertime in Montana and spend the winters in the Pacific Northwest. So now I've got on this little rotation going geographically, and keep writing books. The publisher keeps wanting them, and I don't know how to stop. So I have to keep doing it.
Wow. So, Philip, you are a vagabond. You're a writing vagabond. That is fascinating. Somewhere out there, there's a great many people who fantasize about the life you have. No attachments. Go where the wind takes you, although it seems to take you to the same places. But it must have its challenges, doesn't it?
Well,
or maybe you just love it.
I do love it, first of all. You know, I spent 30 years flying, traveling where other people told me to go. And so there's that aspect. And then I saw the world at 600 miles an hour, and now I can do it at 60. And kind of stop and smell the roses a little bit along the way. And there's places I've been curious about. I first came out to and lived in Anacortes, up in the islands for the first year. And then I decided that I should go to Laguna Beach. I should live in Southern California and write. And I did that for a while. And then I went to Asheville, North Carolina, and I came back to the San Juans. And then I've been to Wisconsin. And then I've Montana, British Columbia. I just travel around. So it is. It's therapeutic for me. You know, I think writing for me is a very solitary process. Today marks the release of Aftershock. So
today's the day.
Today's the day. Yeah.
Oh,
so this
great!
This is my very first official event of the of the Aftershock just 15
oh, I am honored.
Book release. It's fun to get back to it because, you know, you just, I sit at my computer and I write stuff and it's solitary, and I've made friends in different places, but it is a solitary pursuit, I think.
That traveling must, it gives, a writer has to be willing, what was it, Flannery O'Connor said, the writer has to have, have the unique stupidity to just stare. The author has to be able, you have to be willing to dream and daydream and let your mind just drift, where you have to believe in the drift, it seems to me. And I would think that all that solitude and traveling around would give you ample time to become very acquainted with your imagination, with that part of you that likes to drift. Is that so?
Well, it exactly. I think what I do is I live in my head. So
welcome to the club.
But what you can do to alter that or ease that burden is to put your physical body in a really nice place. So when it is time to get out of your head, you can go do it. And I do that when I'm writing in the summertime. I write in the morning and then I go out and it's time to go fish, and I go splash around in a trout stream and with my fly rod, and that's hard enough because I'm not all that great at it yet, that it gets me out of my head. And then I find some of those problems will solve themselves if I just get out of my way. So that works.
I like what you said. Problems will solve themselves if I get out of the way.
Exactly.
Is that what you just said? Because that, boy, I'll tell you, that is so true. Get out of the way. And do you spend a lot of time getting out of your way?
Well, you know, no, actually, honestly, I spend more time getting in my way. But I am old enough to know it's like, you know what, maybe it's time to step aside and kind of let this mess move past me, and I'll catch up with it in a little bit. So, you know, there is that. I have a little plaque on my desk that I really like. It says, some days I wrestle with my demons, and some days we just cuddle. And I think that's what writing books is about.
Yeah. Well, who was it? Lisa Gardner said something I thought was really nice. She said that the job of the author is to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. So in other words, you know it's coming. Don't be freaked out by the discomfort of not knowing. That's
right.
Part and parcel of the job. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I know it is. And it's funny, each book I've written it's a different journey. I mean, the end result is hopefully the same, which, you know, you have a book that people enjoy, but the process is always different and it's always changing. And books are like, almost like children, you know, you love them all, but there's some that are problem children and some that are just really easy. So you never know what to expect. And it is challenging, you know, however it goes. And, so I think you need to be flexible and then listen. You know, listen to your own voice. And I think that's the part I liked most about transitioning from a pilot to an author. Is the pilot is very structured. It's very immediate. The feedback is instantaneous. And then you go home. And writing is the complete opposite. So it's a contrast in careers . I almost think writing is harder and more exciting than the flying ever was.
Yeah. Harder than the flying. Well, you know, one of my favorite stories, I've told it many times, but it's about how my sister was a very smart woman, got straight A's in college, but she got one B. And that B, she's a teacher. She was great at French. She was great at calculus. She got an A in psychology. She was a psychology major and a teaching major. But that B was in creative writing. And I didn't even know she took it. And I said, I didn't know you took creative writing. She said, I hated that class. I said, why? And she said, because there's no right answers. And she's right. There isn't a right answer. You know that. For instance, For instance, you've written 5 suspense novels.
Right.
Why suspense? There's a lot of types of books to read or write. What drew you to suspense?
Oh, I write what I wanted to read. Books early on, the books that shaped me were. I grew up in Kansas, and there was three channels, and they were in black and white on the TV. So it was up to me to entertain myself, and I was fortunate to have parents that were readers, and we'd go to the library, and I'd pick out airplane books and whatnot. But when I got old enough to read my own books, I started with the Hardy Boys, which I think a lot of people do.
I did. That's where I started.
Yeah, you know, and there's that influenced me, and I think there's a little Frank and Joe in every mystery thriller suspense novel out there because it's a teamwork, it's the buddy thing, it's the action, it's familiar, so you come back to it. But one of my favorite authors was Wilbur Smith, and he wrote sweeping, historical fiction pieces of South Africa, and then there was Ernest K. Gann, who actually lived in Friday Harbor. He was a pilot turned novelist, and he wrote High as the Mighty and Fate as the Hunter, and they made movies out of his stuff, and I was hooked. I'm like, oh my gosh, a pilot that writes books, that's, I want to do what he does. And so those, and then I read early Clive Cussler, I read Raise the Titanic, and when I read that, it's like, you know what? He's right. Go big or go home. You know,
right.
and that turns me into a thriller writer, and that's what I like.
That's great. Well, I know part of the reason you had early success, it seems to me, is that you did the absolute right thing, which is you wrote the thing you love to read. It's a very obvious choice to make, but strangely, Philip, it's not a choice I made actually. It took me a long time to find where I was happiest, because I knew I loved to write, but it took me many years of writing books that weren't quite really what I was after to find my place. So it makes it so much easier when you're writing the thing you would want to read. So you started out on the right foot, that's for sure.
Well, there's that. Now, I read somewhere, and in fact, I can't even remember who actually said this first, but I quoted them not too long ago. But I think what I tell people is, and what I believe is, you don't write what you know. I mean, that's the good place to start, but you write what you're passionate about. And so I write, thrillers that have an aviation theme to them.
Sure.
They're not full on aviation thrillers, but that is something I can bring to the table, and I can take the reader not only into the airplane and keep them up past their bedtime, but I can drag them into the cockpit and keep them up way past their bedtime. So
and people love to know how things actually work. A lot of readers really enjoy learning how it. I've spent years in the restaurant industry, and I'm not going to write books about the restaurant industry, I don't think. But I know people are really curious about what it is to actually be a sommelier and what it is actually to be a head waiter or whatever. And I'm sure people are very curious to know what it actually is to fly a plane as opposed to sort of the fantasy of flying it. Don't you think?
It is. And then to see it fall apart. And that's that happens in my books sometimes. So and I find that today, and I would never ever have predicted this, but when I talk to people, I meet people at book signings or in conventions and stuff, and there are a lot of people that will sit there and read your book, and when they get to something they're curious about it or uncertain about, they're going to Google it on their phone.
Right.
And so you've got your credibility's on the line the whole time that you're writing the book or the whole time they're reading the book. So you do have to know what you're talking about, and you can't, you have to make stuff up in a really way, in a good way that'll get past Google, or you'll lose your audience.
They are going to, if you leave something out. I was talking to Margaret George, who's a historical writer. She wrote Elizabeth, and she wrote Henry the Eighth, and Cleopatra, and a couple. And she said, "Boy, historical readers, if you miss a note, somebody is going to be all over you. That's just the way it is.
Yes.
You're vetted by the entire reading populace.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good friend of mine who passed away a while back, who was a great mentor to me, actually. It was Vince Flynn. And he...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He read one of my early books and was a big force in kind of propelling me forward. And he read it one night and he called me and he says, Phil, I love this. He says, it's right here, page 169, blah, 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 whatever. That guy's rank is wrong and you'll hear about it. And it's like, wow, okay, good to know. And he's right.
Yeah. So true. Hey, we got a caller who wants to ask you a question.
Sure.
I think I know this is Jeff. Is that you?
Bill, another great interview, my friend.
Thank you.
Philip, perfect timing. I'm a great fan of your work, and it's a great segue into the question I was just going to ask that I'd written previously. It's two-part. First part is, how important do you feel it is for a writer, especially just starting out, to have a mentor? That's the first part. And the second part, you know, like your English teacher did and your friend. And the second part of the question is, after reaching a certain level of success when publishing your writing, how important it is to work with a really good editor?
Oh, good question, Jeff.
Those are good questions.
Mentors and editors.
A mentor is really important, and I can't even stress that enough. But like your neurosurgeon and your financial person, you've got to pick the right mentor. I mean, you've got to work with the right person that gets you. So it's a process not to be taken lightly. Your mom's going to always like your stuff. She might not be the best candidate. So you need to, and it might even be someone who might not even be a writer, but, you know, a successful business person or something, because I think a lot of the writing itself is very solitary. You know, there's only room for one set of fingers on the keyboard, but just the attitude, the mindset, the determination, I think that can come from a lot of different places. And it's important for a writer to have that, because there's a lot of people that tell you you can't do it. You need to find someone that'll tell you that you can. Not only can you can, but here are some of the qualities that you need to develop and possess to make it happen. And then the editing, in my case, I need all the editors I can get. I'm not a great technical writer. I mean, I don't even worry about it anymore. I used to stress about punctuation, all that stuff, and it's just like, you know, I could sit here all morning and wonder if that should be a comma or if I should start a new sentence. And I just, my process doesn't allow that. So, but I am fortunate to have one of the best editors. Love her to death. Don't know how she does it. I don't know how she puts up with me, first of all, because I just saw some stuff she edited of mine, and it looks like a crime scene from the TV show Dexter. There's so much red ink on those pages. But I think it's essential. Yeah, because you can't be your own coach, and that's what an editor is. You know, you look at the best of the best in any field out there, I don't care if it's baseball or golf or whatever it is. They've got a coach. They've got somebody that can just stand behind them going, move your left knee in a little bit or something. So I think that editing is just as important as the writing sometimes.
Yeah. And you've had the same protagonist, same hero for all five books, Donovan Nash, right? I'm getting the name right, Donovan Nash. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Why him? What were you looking for in a hero?
Well,
why did you know you found the right one?
Well, because he was flawed. Yeah, he's flawed. He's troubled. And I wanted someone. People tease me about, like, oh, you think you're Donovan Nash, and it's like, well, no, not really, because he's he's taller and younger, better looking, has more money. other than that, he and I are just alike. But right. So, you know, I think I found someone who was complicated enough to grow. I mean, to carry a series. And then to just add to it, and it was one of the just some of these things you just do by accident or just gut feeling, and you don't know if they're going to work out or not. But there's actually two protagonists. There's Donovan, and then there's his love interest, and that's and her. She's Dr. Lauren McKenna, and
yeah.
She is without a doubt the smartest person in the room wherever she is. And potential between the two of them, and then you add in the scientific aspects of it, or the they work for a scientific research organization called EcoWatch, and so it takes them into harm's way.
Right.
Category 5 was about flying into hurricanes and the hurricane hunters, and that kind of stuff just fascinates me especially, and I think a lot of other people. And since then, we've dealt with blizzards. The Aftershock, the book that just came out today, deals with a volcano in Guatemala. So there's fertile ground for these people to get in trouble, and for me to try to figure out how to save them.
You know, it reminds me of listening to James Brooks, the guy who wrote and produced shows like Mary Tyler Moore and Frasier and Cheers. And he said, essential to creating a great a sitcom is to have a main set with lots of doors you can come in and out of. And that because you need people to be able to leave and come in and leave and come in. And I always feel like series writers are the same way. They need to create a setting where a lot can happen, where there's potential for lots and where they're not pigeonholed into the same story over and over again. Would you say that's true?
Exactly. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
I look at Clancy and I look at Vince Flynn and the people that I, Michael Crichton, and his imagination, all their imaginations were amazing. And then they had the characters and the vehicles that to go and do anything anywhere in the planet. And that's what I liked. That was sort of my life too. The book, I just sold book number 6.
And congrats.
It takes place. Thank you. It's the one upstairs with all the red ink on it that I was just talking about. But it takes place entirely in Eastern Europe, where I used to spend a lot of time. And when I was flying, our corporate headquarters was in Budapest. And so I spent a lot of time sitting there on the Danube and thinking, this would be a cool place for a book. And it turns out maybe it is. So I didn't want to be pigeonholed. I wanted, and maybe a little like my real life, I wanted as many options as for my characters as I could possibly get for them.
Right. Excellent. Well, Philip, we're just about to the end of our time, but I do have one more question for you. I'd like to ask all my authors, and I'd like you to finish this sentence for me. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you, Philip? It's taught you anything at all?
I think writing has taught me how to be more insightful with friends, family, people around me. We're all more complicated than we appear on the surface. And I think that without a doubt, writing has shown me that.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Well, Philip, thank you so much for coming on. And
my pleasure.
And the best of luck with Aftershock. It's available today, I assume, where all fine books are sold.
I'm hoping so, but yes, my tour schedule is on my website, and all of that's available online. I'm easy to find, but if I'm coming close to you, out the readers out there, I'd love for you to come by and say hi.
Awesome. Well, I hope they do. Well, Philip, thank you so much, and best of luck.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
All right, take it easy. Insightful. It's true. It's true. You got to see beneath the surface. Stories don't happen on the surface, people. Stories are the current of feeling running underneath the surface events. Always, always. Well, I'll be here again next week, as always, and I'll be talking to a kind of life coach and inspirational speaker, Randy Spelling. But until then, find something you love and just do it as often as you can. If you do that, can't go wrong.